One of the things I feel really privileged about with this podcast is the ability to get in some really meaty and heavy topics that are impacting the world of work, and more specifically from a kind of HR and people operations standpoint. And there's a topic that I'm beginning to hear a lot more of that hasn't quite entered the public domain yet, and that is the idea of burnout. And when you think about the stress and the pressure and the weight of a modern chief people officer, it's massive. You're dealing with complicated issues. You've got incredible expectations from the business. You're dealing with an incredibly volatile asset of the organization, which is people. And that's a lot to carry. And couple that with the fact that you typically don't have anybody within the organization you can talk to about these things. And it's an easy recipe for burnout. And I'm really excited in today's episode to be joined by Mai Tan, who's going to talk to me about her own journey around burnout and what she has learned and how that's impacted her world of work and even some ideas on self-care for people leaders. So we'll be back with that after a brief word from our sponsor. 21st Century HR is a podcast exploring how to build better businesses through modern people practices and approaches. It's brought to you by my firm, Amplify. Amplify provides HR executive search and strategic consulting services that help companies build better organizations. From employer brand development and execution to global talent strategies, Amplify develops custom solutions that help clients from Hootsuite to SpaceX optimize their recruiting capabilities. Amplify also hosts a new community for HR leaders called the Ecosystem. The Ecosystem was designed to bring modern HR leaders around the world together to share ideas, inspiration, and support. Learn more at amplifytalent.com. Hey everyone, welcome to 21st Century HR Podcast. I'm your host, Lars Schmidt, and today I am really excited to dig into a meaty conversation with Mai Tan. Mai is the founder of EMP HR Consulting, and we're going to spend some time really digging into her career and the evolution of that over the last several years, but we're also going to get into a really important topic that I'm hearing much more of in terms of the conversation of things that are impacting the CHRO role, and that's burnout. And I'm really excited to spend some time with Mai talking about that and her own journey and something that I know is being experienced by many chief people officers and CHROs that are listening to this podcast. And so it's a topic that I think warrants a lot more conversation, and I'm really excited for Mai willing to share her story about that. So Mai, thanks so much for coming on the show. If you wouldn't mind, why don't you give the listeners a quick introduction and background on you?
Oh, well, I'm excited to be here. So thank you for having me, Lars. It's wonderful to be on air with everybody. So my name is Mai Tan, and I've had a 15, 20-year career as usually the first people leader in 7 startup companies. So I've seen a lot, and I love and thrive in the technology space. I've been lucky enough to really be the first one in to build the function. I usually lead the HR and recruiting teams, and I've just had a great career in tech companies, where as they're building and scaling and having 100% headcount growth and 100% revenue growth year over year, I get to be the person that comes in and builds the infrastructure and process and all the people programs that make for a successful company. So excited to be here today with you.
Yeah, well, Mai, you've got a lot of experience that I want to dig into, but before we really kind of go through some of the companies and the roles and the scope of your background, what initially drew you to HR? You know, I know you spent most of your career in HR. What about that field attracted you?
Well, like a lot of people, Lars, honestly, I fell into HR. So one of my first jobs out of college was I was a research assistant at an investment bank. And one of the bankers that I worked for, Peter Hunt, decided that he was tired of investment banking. And so he wanted to form his own startup. And one day he pulled me aside and said, "Mai, do you enjoy doing what you're doing?" And I said, "You know, honestly, I was in my early 20s. The work was highly stressful. There were long hours, and it's a highly politicized environment just because there's so much money involved in transactions within investment banks." So I looked at him and I said, "You know what? Honestly, Peter, I'm not happy here. I'm super stressed, and I pray every day that everything will go well at work." And he said, "Well, how would you like to join me? I'm going to build my own company. I'm going to just, I know how to handle the business side. I'm a banker. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I need somebody like you to just help me set it all up. Help me find the office space, help me hire the team, help me with like what I'm supposed to know about HR. And I said, I don't have any of that experience though, Peter. And he just said, you know what, Mai, like, let's do it. If you're not happy here, just join me and we can figure it out along the way. And I looked at him and I said, you know what, I'm in, because this investment banking world is very stressful. And so that's what really was my foray into HR. And it was wonderful because I was a liberal arts major, wasn't really sure what I wanted to do as I grew up, but I knew it wasn't to stay in that environment where it was just too high stress for somebody like me.
Yeah. Well, so when you first got started, obviously you'd never done any of that, right? You're doing that for the first time. What was that experience like when you're kind of building out essentially a new company and taking on all these responsibilities and really kind of learning as you go?
Well, the wonderful thing, Lars, was that Peter didn't quite know what he was doing either. So there was a lot of risk tolerance for like, let's just try to do this, or let's experiment. Let's go out on the internet and figure out how we're going to find people. Let's write, a job description and see what that sounds like. And so we tried and experimented with a lot of different things. It was nerve-wracking. There were days where I was well beyond my comfort zone of, okay, let me present in front of, the board now, because I was young. I didn't really know how to speak in front of a board, much less present details about a business that I knew nothing about at the time. And so it was, as I look back, those were really wonderful moments for me that have shaped me for the rest of my life. And as we're talking today, I smile because I even remember having to go to Crate and Barrel to get dishes and plates and silverware for the office, because we didn't want to have a bunch of plasticware in the office. We wanted nice things as related to, the investment banking background. And so, yeah, I went shopping, and today I still have some of those Crate and Barrel dishes that we used. And so it's kind of funny because it makes me smile.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I think when you're in that, inception level build mold mode, you wear all the hats, right? Mm-hmm. It's you're definitely not specialized in that kind of an environment. From there, you spent the next series of roles in your career, coming into early stage startups and building out the people function, people capability in the Valley. So what was that? Now that you had a bit more of kind of build role and build experience under your belt, You've built organizations, you've built people teams. How did that experience translate for you as you started kind of going into more startups and building out those people teams at an early stage?
I would say that all of us are the sum of our experiences. So the variety of roles that I had previous to falling into HR have really created who I am today. So I know how to negotiate prices. I know how to really understand what motivates people. I know what I'm looking for when I need to hire somebody on my own team. And so all of these transferable skills have helped me. And they were skills that I gained along the way doing things like presenting to the board or going shopping to figure out what was right for the office, or even, designing an office layout. So I feel that everybody has this cacophony of different experiences that shape who they are. And now that I'm a little bit older and hopefully wiser, you would tell me differently, hopefully, Lars. I feel that they've all found their way to two big nuggets of things. Number one is communication skills. Sometimes people have the right message and you really have a very solid point. But what I've seen throughout the course of my career is when you deliver it in a way that people don't hear it, it just loses its steam. So I think I've carried that lesson with me. And then the second thing is you really have to build relationships with people, whether that's inside your organization or with your own community and, you know, the people that you rely upon for advice. Like, I feel that all of this is about relationships and helping each other out. The world is a complicated place, and our skills are transferable in many different professional and personal environments. But I'm trying to stay grounded in knowing that I want to talk to people like humans. I don't want to use terms like inclement weather. Like, who talks like that? I have no idea what that means. So like, when there's bad weather, stay at home, stay safe, right? Like, that's a much easier way to talk to people nowadays. And maybe those are the things that are coming to mind as you're asking those questions.
Yeah, you know, I feel like there's a rant in me on human capital that I'm going to avoid when you talk about staying away from jargon. But that every time I hear that, I die a little on the inside, because I'm just like, that's like the least human way you could talk about your employees. But anyway, that's another topic for another episode. You know, for you, I know you spent, you know, the majority of your career in Silicon Valley working in startups and tech companies there. But last year, you relocated to New York. You know, what kind of motivated that move? What got you and your family out to New York?
This is more of the personal side of my story. I had spent 20 years in San Francisco. We had built our life around technology, because my husband works in tech. I worked in tech. I still do. And along the way, we had a daughter, and her name is Emma. And I live for Emma. She is the love of my life. And I work hard for her. She's my boss every day. Trying to hold it back here.
No, that's okay.
I want the world to change for her. And living in the tech world and seeing what happens at work sometimes with colleagues who can be really counterproductive to each other, I just wanted her to have a different life and a different viewpoint. So Emma is 11 years old now, and I wanted to change the working world for her. So I said, you know what, I have 10 years to make sure that when she goes out to a workplace, that she doesn't experience what I did. And so part of that meant giving her a very global lifestyle. And so we found out about a school called the United Nations International School late last year, and we applied on a whim because my husband and I said, well, if a school like this exists, we should totally apply, see if she can get in, and then we can figure out everything else along the way, because we said we can probably find jobs, we can probably find a home, but the school is so important for us, for Emma. And the reason why the UN school was important was because these are kids of diplomats and like a very nice variety of people that normally Emma wouldn't be exposed to. So we applied, she took tests, she got interviewed, we got interviewed. There was another test, and luckily she got in. So within the span of maybe a 3-week period, we decided, you know what, like, this is a chance of a lifetime. And so we left our friends and our family and our life in San Francisco and moved cross country. And so fast forward a year later, she's loving the school. We actually have a map on our wall, because there are some kids that are coming from cities and countries that we've never heard of before. And so when she comes home to say, where is Malawi, Africa? We ourselves have to look it up, and it's just a wonderful experience. And today, randomly, was UN Day at the school, where parents and children are encouraged to dress in their homeland countries or whatever countries they identify with and bring in some food. And so we've like just come back from the wonderful celebration of all the different countries. And I don't know, that's sort of what drew us to New York, and is very different from San Francisco for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's an amazing journey, and I can appreciate the experience that Emma will have in that kind of an environment, and how that might differ from what she would have experienced in San Francisco. You know, when you think about it, I know when you first came to New York, you again kind of picked up and moved into a similar role to your past experience as a head of people at a tech company. From your experience, I know you've only been in New York for about a year, but how would you kind of compare and contrast the expectations of the role of a head of people, of a CPO in San Francisco versus New York? Or would you? I guess I'm that question makes an assumption that there is a difference. So let me rephrase that. Do you find it different, or are there any kind of nuances or intricacies about kind of that role in New York versus San Francisco?
Okay, I will go and talk about the difference between what I see between the two coastal cities, and then maybe I'll have you think and chime in about like what makes it different in DC where you are. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so maybe I can boil it down to two things that I've noticed. And I've thought about writing a book about this because they're actually small differences, but they make a big difference in the way you see things. So the first thing I will say is that the variety of work in New York is much more diversified, so that you have different industries in New York. You have advertising, you have journalism, you have banking, you have a lot of different industries. So yes, of course, technology is one of those. But because of that diversity, you have a variety of people. Like, it's just, I can't explain it any other way, but that there's different demographics over here. There's just more variety in New York. San Francisco, at least where we lived, which was downtown, city proper, everything is about tech. The news, the, you know, what people wear, the Allbird shoes, the $100 t-shirt, like almost everybody mimics the tech world, and, you know, started by Zuckerberg and started by, you know, other 20 something gazillionaires who've started businesses out there. So the world in San Francisco is very tech focused. Cookie delivery companies, they are on the cutting edge of so much technology that it's all around you. And so maybe that's one of the biggest differences that I see. You have tech in New York, but not everybody talks about tech at all.
Yeah.
And that is, for us, that is a big change, and it's a healthy change because we're loving the diversity that Emma gets and that we get every day when we meet people, when we have friends and play dates together. It's amazing, the variety. So that's maybe the first thing I see. And then the second thing, which is probably the most important takeaway, is the communication styles are very different. So in San Francisco and maybe the West Coast, when somebody gives you a compliment, it sounds like this. That is a lovely sweater on you. That color is so it's so nice for the fall season. Whereas in New York, the compliment sounds like this. Nice sweater. And it's a very small difference, but that communication style is very evident here in New York, where I feel that time is precious, and so they cut right to the chase. And there are no fluff words, there are no additional sentences, and maybe this is a little generational too, but a lot of just going straight to the point. And I have definitely seen it at work, where managers out here on the East Coast in New York are just blunt. So that's probably been my biggest takeaway and my biggest learning on the difference between the two. How about in DC? What would you say about DC?
Yeah, I mean, I think DC is probably more in line with New York than San Francisco, particularly just around the breadth of industry and companies and opportunities. You have much smaller tech and startup space here, and then a lot of government roles, a lot of aerospace, a lot of industries like that. Are very different, obviously, than tech and startup in terms of pace and philosophy and approach. But it's also a very diverse city, which is interesting. I think similar to New York, you have a lot of expats from all around the world that will, come here. And obviously, with DC being the hub of government, that dominates the conversation, which, these days is not always pleasant. But You know, it's it is a very the pace probably is faster than the Bay, but not as fast as New York. I think New York kind of stands alone in terms of just the brevity and shortness. And having worked across all three regions, they all have their own nuance. For you, you earlier this year, you'd made the decision to kind of move away from the corporate world and start your own consulting firm. And what led to that change?
Oh, Lars, I was exhausted, honestly, and I didn't realize it. I just think whether it's called the people function or the HR function, that function is so big now. It is, you have to wear five different hats. And honestly, that's not unusual in today's business environment, but I think why it's so hard for HR leaders is because the hats that we wear touch upon the people and all of the programs that we run. And as you know, and as your community knows, people are the most unpredictable part of the business. And so you not only have to speak the language of business and talk about data and metrics, but you have to be the confidant sometimes to the CEO. The two jobs between HR and CEO can be very lonely and isolating because it's not like you can tell everybody what's going on. And I just feel that HR and people leaders today have to build the retention programs. They have to build the engagement programs. They have to build the leadership programs in order to attract and retain everybody. And then they have to know the business. And then they sometimes serve as advisors to the executive team and especially to the CEO. And I think in all of that, what I found was sometimes people don't appreciate how much balance that takes. I think one of your previous podcasts had somebody that talked about how they always felt they had to be perfect. Like they were always the ones in the room with the most EQ, or they were the ones in the room calling people out for maybe things that as grownups we shouldn't say. And I will tell you that I think that's what was exhausting. Even though I still have a passion around what I do and I love and thrive in this space nowadays, because it's not just administrative compliance stuff, it is all of these things. And so I've just learned though that because we're all living life at work, right? With all of the devices that we have nowadays, with all the technology, the personal and professional lives are bleeding together. And because of that, there's a lot of emotions at work. And quite honestly, you're bringing together people that have very different management styles, that have different personality styles into the workplace where they spend sometimes 10 hours a day together. And that is a recipe for a lot of drama. And honestly, I just needed a break. I love doing what I do, but it's getting harder. And I don't know. I've always felt like my role was to simplify life for everybody, right? We live in a complicated world. There's a lot of technology. There's instant news and information coming at us every day, all day long. And I always felt like my role was to take all the distractions away so you could do your best work. So, you know, insurance is a distraction. A handbook, sexual harassment trainee is a distraction. Compensation, all of that is a distraction. So I wanted to simplify those programs so that everybody could do their best work. And honestly, Lars, we leave our family and friends behind every day when we go to work. And I wanted to build workplaces where that time was worth it. Like if we were actually sacrificing time away from the people that we cherish the most, then I wanted a workplace that could deliver, like, you know what, you're proud to come into work. You're excited and you love the teams that you work with and for. And that's really what I thought my purpose was. And I still have that. That's always anchored me in my vision. I just feel that people don't realize that sometimes.
Yeah, I like the way you frame that. I think that the, you know, and I've you know said this many times, but you know, to me, the role of a CPO, of a CHRO is one of the most difficult in the C-suite today, because you have to have the you know, the business acumen that is on par with your executive peers. You have to understand the financials. You have to understand the go-to-market strategy. You have to understand the marketing and branding positioning. You have to understand the organizational strategy, and you have to understand the people strategy, and then you have to deal with the people. And I don't mean deal with them in a negative way. I mean, like, again, they're unpredictable. They're emotional. Things happen. Life happens. You're dealing with, you know, employees who may pass away, who may lose family members, who may lose children, just very real, emotional, difficult situations. And you're dealing with all of that. And you're not only dealing with all of that, but you're also dealing with that in an environment where you don't really have people internally that you can talk to about that stuff. And so a lot of the stuff you take on your shoulders and you carry that alone. And that's an incredible burnout. And it leads to something that I know you've talked about, we've talked about, and you've written about recently, which is something that I'm seeing a pretty sharp increase in the kind of CPO role and CHRO role, which is burnout. It's the carrying of all of that weight, all of those burdens, everything that comes with that is really starting to take an emotional toll on CHROs and CPOs and heads of people. And you know, I know you wrote a story last month just about your own kind of journey towards burnout. And I know that that has resonated with a lot of readers. It's definitely gotten a lot of traffic on Medium. And I'll actually include a link to the post in the show description. So if you're listening and you want to give that a read, I would recommend that. But going back to that story, what led you to write that?
I looked out across my office one day. We had a very well-designed, lovely laid-out office that was beautiful, right in Midtown Manhattan. And I looked up and I just said, is this what I'm going to do really for the rest of my life? I could do it, but am I really happy doing it? Because for a while, I wasn't enjoying my role, and I honestly didn't realize I was burning out. And that's partly why I wrote the post, because I was trying to articulate what was going through my mind. So part of my journey around leaving sort of corporate life and my normal, I guess, 9-to-5 job was to say, you know what, this is time for me to really explore what's next. I had hired a coach about 2 years ago. Her name is Rajkumari Nyoji. And she took me through a journey around epigenetics, which is, Lars, have you ever heard of that?
I haven't.
So it's the study of your gene chemistry and sort of what happens to you through the course of your family history. And through that, she's not your typical executive coach, but she has led me on this journey for now 2 years around really understanding what I want in my life, what's important to me, and really what brings me joy. And so as she was asking me questions around joy, I realized, you know what, maybe my job wasn't quite as joyful as it used to be. And that was the moment when I had that question in my mind of, is this really where I want to be? Is this bringing me any joy? I don't, get me wrong, Lars, like, you as an HR leader, as a people person, you're the first one to find about all the great things that are happening in people's lives, like, you know, the marriages and the baby showers and the adoptions. All of these things are wonderful, and so I don't want to neglect that. It's a wonderful time to be in this space, and for me, I wanted that back without all of the other stuff, which is what I'm really seeing at work, is just counterproductive behavior. I've always felt like the enemy is on the outside, competition's on the outside. But what I've seen internally at companies is a lot of combative folks, like arguing over money or arguing over, like, I need that resource. Why do you get to go first? My priority is higher than yours. And I just said, wow, what are we doing to each other? And so that's what led me to write the blog post, and thank you for sharing it with your 21st century listeners too, Lars, because the outpouring of support that I've received is amazingly cathartic. I thought I was going through this alone, and strangely, it feels nice to know that others are in my shoes and are very empathetic. And it's sad to know that they feel like that too. And so, yeah, I think it's a topic that, you know, thank you for giving me the airtime to tell my story. But I think it's important for everybody to just look up one day and ask, is this bringing you joy?
Yeah, well, and honestly, I think that the reason why the story has resonated with so many people is because so many people are feeling it, right? And I think that I was really excited to see your post because you're saying out loud what a lot of people are feeling and talking about privately, but for whatever reason, this is still one of those topics where people don't feel comfortable, talking about it publicly. And it makes others feel like, why am I going through this when all my peers aren't? When the reality is your peers are, and they're just not talking about it in many cases. And I'm always, you know, curious when you're in a position and you're dealing with, I know in your post, you talked about some of the contributing factors to burnout, just being all of the inappropriate behavior at work and the friction and the tension and the infighting. And, you know, as a human, right, as a human who's also in this kind of interesting oversight role, how do you, you know, can you compartmentalize those things? Can you kind of put on your, HR hat, so to speak, and try to deal with that situation objectively while still kind of processing the human feelings and emotions associated with dealing with that conflict?
I think everybody has to find their own coping mechanism because I can't remember her name. I think it was Claudia, but she was the one in your previous podcast that had talked about being the perfect person, right? Like HR yeah. leaders are usually the most diplomatic and we have to smile amidst sometimes the chaos. And I feel for me, where I anchored myself in separating perhaps some of the trauma from some of the events I've seen at work, I anchored myself in knowing that my job was not only to take away distractions and to really give you an awesome workplace that was worth your sacrifice every day, leaving family and friends. It was my job was to make you successful. That's what I want you to do. I want you to win. I want you to get where you want to go, which, you know, I love the newer generations that will come to me and say, I want to make vice president in 2 years. And they have no skills yet. They don't realize it, but that they have their dreams. And that's where I've always grounded myself in knowing that the role of HR leaders, even though it's complex today, in its pure simplicity is supposed to be that you make your people successful. And sometimes when, you know, there is friction at work, that's where it begins. It's sort of you have to ask them, like, what are they doing? What are they fighting for? Where do they hope to go? What does this do for them? And I feel that that's how I've been able to come across as the person that I want, which is kind, caring, and compassionate. I don't want to be the fluffy HR person, but I definitely want to be the human in human resources, right? I think we've gotten away from even that. But, Lars, during this time off, I've had a chance to go to what's called the Human Performance Institute in Florida. Have you heard about that institute?
I haven't, no.
So it's a 3.5-day program based out of Orlando, Florida. And in the end, what you have to come out of that program doing is having a mission statement of your own. Like, what do you want? What is core to who you are, Lars? And so it's actually hard to do, but my mission statement is to be an extraordinary person who's kind, compassionate, and optimistic so I can bring out the extraordinary in others. And that's like, that's an anchoring tool for myself now that I'm on my own, being my own HR consultant and doing a lot of project work for various different companies. I still anchor myself in that mission of bringing out the extraordinary in others. That's how we have to do it together. And so knowing that, it helps me like deal with some of the tension and some of the not so good moments at work, and hopefully buoys the spirits when you do hear about marriage or something working out well or somebody graduating. It's a privilege to work in this field. It really is. And it is growing and it is becoming much more complex. So the self-care part is the part that I'm finally doing. Because that's maybe the other thing I recognized is we spend so much time worrying and caring for others that we forget about ourselves.
I think that self-care piece is so important because, you know, it's most people in your role and certainly most CPOs that I've worked with and kind of am friends with, they love the job, right? They love the work. They love the impact that they can have on both people and the business. And so the role in a lot of ways is a privilege, but it's also really easy to just throw yourself at that because you feel that way about it and not necessarily prioritize self-care or boundaries in some cases. And, you know, last question I have for you, Maya. I know you've had obviously some time the last couple of months to really put some thoughtful reflection on your role and your own kind of self-care and priorities. I'm 100% sure that there are listeners out there that are in the same place where you were 6 months ago and they're feeling burned out. They're tired. They're emotionally drained. You know, what advice would you have for listeners that themselves are kind of really battling and struggling with burnout right now?
Maybe two takeaways, if that's okay, Lars.
Yeah, absolutely.
Create your own mission statement of what's important to you, what do you believe, and stay centered in who you are so that that's how you come across at work. As in, even though times there are some times that are going to be joyous and awesome, there are other moments that are a little bit more difficult because they're filled with a lot of friction and tension. And if you just center yourself on what you believe, I feel that you'll have a much cleaner frame of mind and clarity of thought. And then my second is you have to spot the patterns of your own burnout. And I didn't do a good job of that, but now, you know, ask the question of what brings you joy and is what you're doing really joyful to you. You know, reach out to your friends, talk to others, talk to me, talk to you, you know, reach out to community members who do the same thing you do, maybe in a different company. And just talk about some of those moments, some of those hard moments, because it is true. Some of the things that we deal with have to be held in confidence. But I feel like there's ways when you reach out and when you talk to others, you don't have to name names, but when you talk to others, it actually helps you articulate what's going on in your mind. And honestly, sometimes your own CEO is going to be very therapeutic for you because he or she's probably going through the same thing of trying to understand how to deal with all of the different moving parts of a business nowadays. So, is that helpful, Lars?
Yeah, no, that is. And I appreciate, you know, both those kind of tangible takeaways for listeners, but also just your, you know, leadership and sharing your own journey and talking about a topic that, you know, I know you're not alone in dealing with and hopefully kind of through you sharing your journey and your experience, others will be able to kind of see themselves in that and take the steps they need to practice self-care and just do the things they need to try to get ahead of reaching that point of burnout. So Maya, I'm grateful for your story. I'm grateful for your time and really appreciate you coming on the show to share your journey.
Well, Lars, thank you for giving me a voice and for always lending your voice to others. It's great to have you in this community and I'm just very privileged to know you personally and professionally. So thank you for all the hard work that you've been doing to elevate the rest of us too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 21st Century HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this or read stories from the 21st Century HR Fast Company series, go to 21stcenturyhr.com. And if you want to make your podcast just a little more awesome, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform your ears desire. You'll find all the subscribe links on the website. And if you enjoy the podcast, do me a favor and share it with your peers, your network, your boss, and your CEO. Help me get the podcast into the ears of anyone who wants to know what HR and recruiting looks like when done really well. They'll thank you for it, and so will I. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.